Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Live Line. 51551 is our text number, as always, and the sad passing today of Kathleen Watkins. Like the first female face on Irish, if not the first face on Irish national television on New Year's Eve in 1961, and had a stellar broadcasting career for many decades here in RTE. Also wrote fantastic children's books, which she loved, Piggeen and Hoat, and curated poetry collections. Obviously, brilliant musician, harpist, Ireland's foremost harpist at one stage. Of course, mother to Susie and Crona born, and granny to her grandchildren, who she, Nana Kit, as she was known to her grandchildren, deeply loved. And a great friend to many, many people, including Mary Louise O'Donnell, former senator, academic. Mary Louise, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Joe.
Sad day for you. Mary, you knew her so well.
Oh, I did. Oh, she was a wonderful friend. She was a wonderful friend for 40 years.
Wow.
40 years. We used to spend our time up in Donegal in the summers, and we had a group of people who walked, the Blue Stack Rambler Walkers, and we spent kind of all our private time there, walking time, talking time, and both Gay and Kathleen became personal friends of mine, but personal private friends, you know, like not a...
Yeah.
Not a public friendship. It was a very private friendship, twice and three times a year. And then when Gay died, we continued our friendship. And I loved her all the days of her life. She was very much what you described there, a Renaissance woman.
Yeah.
I tend to think of the Renaissance man, but this was a Renaissance woman. She was possibly the most cultured person and the most interested in culture and the arts and language and art, music and theatre and poetry, and was interested in young people who were writing and in young writers and storytellers, and interested in singers, and sat at the Fechtuol and went to Fechin and was interested in the theatre and in film. I mean, she was really a Renaissance woman and a pleasure to be around. And in all the time I knew her, Joe, she never, ever said anything undermining or negative about anybody else.
Which I know,
she might.
And I think you're so right, Mary Louise, because, and it's said about a lot of people, I don't know how true it is about a lot of people betimes, but it is so true of Kathleen Watkins, that she was so generous in her words and so supportive of people, and it seems, never a bad word or a criticism or a jibe about anybody.
And if you did criticise, and in the world of media and the world of arts and the world of entertainment, we tend to comment, you know, rightly or wrongly on everything that's going on. Kathleen would kind of smile, or she'd say, well, they're trying, or well, they need another chance, or well, they're young. She never, ever said a bad word. She was a lady to her fingertips, and she was also a woman that could keep great secrets.
Ah.
And by that I mean, she could be a magnificent confidant that we all need at times. If you told Kathleen something about yourself,
Hang on. We'll stay with us. We get a better line. Don't worry, Mary Louise O'Donnell. I want to bring in Mike Murphy, Joe at RT.ie 51551. A sad day, Mike. You knew Kathleen and Gay for longer than 40 years. You were there on New Year's Eve outside the Gresham Hotel in 1961. The only difference is, Mr. Murphy, Kathleen Watkins was inside on television and you were outside pelting snowball, the gourrier that you are.
Absolutely. Listen, that's not fair of you really to bring that up, because you're dead. That was the difference between us. She was cultured and refined.
I've seen her in company with yourself and Annie, and she loved it too. She loved your sense of humour. She loved your divilment.
Funny thing, it's a funny thing. She latterly, in later years, and just in the past couple of years, we'd often meet her up in Herbert Park, and we'd arrange to meet, and she would come out, and she used to wear an old pair of, she'd park the car in a disabled car parking, and then she was on the sticks at the time, and she'd come over to the same seat, and she'd pull on, she used to pull, before she came out, she'd pull on a pair of really woolly socks, long woolly socks to keep her warm, and any old coat that she could find or hat that she could find to come out. And I remember one occasion, Annie went off to do something and left the two of us sitting on a seat. And she said she came back, and we were like a pair of, if you want to say deadbeats, I don't mean that in an unkind way, sitting there, and the two of us hooting with laughter. And of course, like Mary Louise said, it certainly wasn't anything scandalous that Kathleen said. It would have been something that I had said, but she would get great fun out of it. And she just derived such humour out of so many situations. But like Mary Louise has said it all, she was just such a refined, erudite, interested woman. And I don't know how often we'd meet her, and she's on her way tonight to the National Concert Hall or to the Olympia.
The Abbey.
Brian Friel play. There was hardly a Brian Friel play that was staged that she wasn't at nearly every performance. Yeah. Like, she was a great friend of the Friels, and she was just one special woman.
She really was. She really was. And Mike, and also, Mary Louise, of course.
Just saying, also, Mike, extremely generous and kind to everybody. The kindness, you know, that she would remember birthdays, remember a situation, remember an anniversary, remember a need. Always thinking of others. And such wonderful, graceful company all the time, because we could be telling the most raucous stories, the most raucous stuff, and I would look over at Kathleen, and she would be enjoying it better than anybody. You know, there was no kind of moment where she held back at all. She loved a raucous story and great fun.
And one of the things Mary Louise is talking about, the Donegal gang, and again, Kathleen used to go up to Donegal, they had their gang up there. And then we were part of a group of eight. Annie and myself were a part of a group of eight. And for 17 years, we went on holidays together with Gay and Kathleen and a couple of others that, Joe, you would know who they were. But and we'd go. And she used to love when Gay was being teased by the rest of us. And she'd get great fun out of that. And she would say, "You leave my Gazy alone. You leave my Gazy alone."
She was
wonderful.
Yeah, but there are very few people. I mean, there are plenty, but there are very few people who had such a sense of the wonder of Ireland. You know, we spend a lot of time giving out about Ireland, and this is wrong, and that's wrong, and the other's wrong, and we moan and groan and troan. But Kathleen had a great sense of the potentiality of Ireland, especially culturally and artistically. Yeah. And she brought that to life herself, both as a broadcaster and as a documentary maker many years ago, but also in her encouragement, constant encouragement of all these young people who are trying to make it in the arts or media or music or dance or song. And I loved that about her, because it was always refreshing. It was always refreshing. She's something to tell you about some exhibition. You must go to this. You must see this. You must read this. You must listen to that poet. And it's so important for artists that they are in conversation, that we're not always in conversation about what's wrong, but about what's possible in Ireland and what people are doing, and especially the artistic community, who tend to be in the back seats when it comes to the economic graph and banks and insurance companies. Do you know? So there was something refreshing about Kathleen all the time. She should have been the Minister for Arts, because she would have been such an enthusiast.
And she was on the Arts Council, was she not?
She was. It was a long time ago. Yeah,
heavily involved in the Fescal. Another loved the RDS, loved the Abbey, as Mike said, all theatre. Yeah. Loved Brian Friel plays, probably knew them all off by heart. Knew Seamus Heaney poems, would recite them at a moment's, recite them beautifully. But Mike, on the one hand, people would say, obviously Gay, they were married 60 years ago, and his television career. But Kathleen had a very strong television career as well.
She really did. And also, even up to when poor Gay passed away, she just handled herself so well on television and on radio in discussing Gay and their life together. I kind of figure, and I'm sure Mary Louise would agree with me, she's kind of the last of a generation of educated, graceful, erudite, talented women, you know, and she has a circle of friends, and she was never without friends. People used to flock to her, and even after Gay's death, a lot of the mainly women who had worked with Gay kept up their friendship with Kathleen and used to visit her, and she simply loved when they would come and visit her. And of course, she, Susie and Crona, you mentioned Susie and Crona, their daughters, were so good to Kathleen.
Oh, here, here.
She was
mad
about
them. Can I just tell you a
them.
Secret about that?
Yes,
I tell you a secret about that. She was so loved Susie and Crona that she used to say that she was privileged that they loved her so much. They adored her, and they did everything for her. They adored Gay as well, and they did everything for her after he died. And she used to say she was so taken with how much they loved her. You know, that she was so even graceful at that. She had no presumptions that things would happen. And again, as Mike said, you know, she never looked to our courted media, you know, to be out there on the front. They came to her a lot, and she was very reserved in what she, you know, what she exposed about herself or about family or whatever. But I used to watch her, and she used to talk about how much the girls loved her and how privileged she was and how she couldn't really move without them, especially when she got a little weaker over the last year or so, and how much they meant to her. And they need to know, I said that to Susie this morning, your mother adored you, and Crona, how much she loved them and appreciated them being in her life all her life. And they were her best friends, really, do you know? I mean, I think that was absolutely gorgeous of her, you know? She was so beautiful.
But what she did too, with Mary Louise, she kept up her own independence, you know? Yeah. And even when they lived in Sandymount herself and Gay, and even when she was ill, she wanted her own independence. Susie and Ronan and the family wanted her to come out to Howth. Crona wanted her to go to her. But she would go for a while, yes, but she would say, I want to go back to my own place. And she did want her own independence, you know. One of the things, too, you mentioned Mary Louise and Joe did, too, about her love of the arts. And one of the characteristics that when we would be gathering for dinner as a little group, wherever the group was, be it in Donegal or be it abroad with us, she would have a poem. And she used to say, okay, and we knew Kathleen will have a poem this evening. And she would recite a poem. She was as meticulous as Gay was in preparing for things. Yeah. And Joe, you remember well how meticulous Gay was.
Oh, yeah.
And Gay went over and over things on his before he did a program. He was just so fantastic at doing the homework. Kathleen was the same. And she would come to the table and she would know this poem off. And, you know, there were times she'd reduce us to tears because it was emotional. I was going to say now, the one I recall was a wonderful poem by John O'Donoghue, Bannocht, Blessing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just a fabulous poem. But this was a characteristic of hers. I have a poem for you tonight. And then she'd go. It was wonderful.
Okay, let's talk to Susie Bourne, the daughter of Kathleen. Susie.
Hi, Joe. Hello, Joe.
And condolences to you and Crona and Philip and Ronan and her Nana Kit's grandchildren, Keane, Sive, Kate, Saoirse and Harry. Susie, talk to us to begin with about what a wonderful Nana Kit she was, what a wonderful granny she was.
Well, that says it in everything, Joe. Sorry, my voice is a bit shaky. My father always said, Dad always said that actually, in hindsight, Mum's life really was all building up towards the day she became a grandmother. Her adoration of her grandchildren was renowned. When I announced to her that I was pregnant with Keane at the time, his first grandchild, she said at that time when I was only 6 weeks pregnant, I will forever now be known as Nana Kit, not Mum anymore. Okay. And literally, from that day on, she wouldn't answer to anything else. So we all called her Nana Kit, and her relationship with Cian, Saoife, Saoirse, Kate and Harry is phenomenal, and they mm-hmm. have benefited from her interests in them and her education of them. And, you know, we were talking to her this week, and she was weak and saying, you know, the children that they are and what they've become is so much down to her, because they taught her, she taught them the manners, she introduced mm-hmm. them to music, she insisted when we came back from London that they really should do speech and drama. She, Saoife, as is known by some, plays the harp and plays it beautifully, and mm-hmm. she became an avid rugby fan over the recent okay. years with Cian, as we all knew. She never was into rugby before that. So she really, and Violin with Saoirse and everything, she really, that became her life for the last 20 years, and Piggeen was the books were obviously a part of that, but she just adored the grandchildren.
Because the Piggeen books began as stories told by Nana Kit.
Yes, we were living in London at the time, so she was a regular visitor. She always loved London. She would regularly, when we were children, she would always phone Dad at the... at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday to say hello, and he would call her rather, and regularly then she herself and her very close friend Anne Friel, who you spoke about earlier, the two of them would just hop on a plane to London, and they'd go to the opera house and they'd see a ballet or see a play and come back the next morning. And so London was massive to her. So when we moved there, she used to visit us regularly, and that was when she started to tell little Piglet stories. Dickie was Piglet at the time, and because of Winnie the Pooh, Piglet had to become Piggeen.
Okay.
So originally it was Piglet.
Okay.
Yes.
And Susie, the last year, I know Kathleen has been in and out of hospital, but she sounded so bright when she got out of hospital. I know
phenomenal.
She had a fall, and that was like so many that began a sequence, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I mean, she was absolutely perfect up until last Christmas Eve, and she had a fall just on her way to Mass, actually, which was that catalyst in somebody that age that sets off other things. And so she's had, I wouldn't say ill health over the last year, but she's had been in and out of Blackrock for long stints over the last year. But she became the person that Mary Louise and Mike were talking about earlier. She became that person within Blackrock, and every time she had to go back in, her insistence was, could she please go back to her friends on the first floor in the Fitzgerald unit. And last Sunday, when we brought her in again for her final time, they immediately said, let us know that whenever she got there, they had a bed waiting. And this week, they were in and out of her room, whether they were on duty or not. They couldn't do enough for us. They were fabulous, and the dedication was fabulous of them. They were really wonderful.
And I know you were there. You have been there with the whole family.
We were there all week.
Yes,
we've been there since Sunday. We've been sleeping there and on beds and on the floor and everything, and chairs, the usual. And we spoke to her. The children wrote to her on her 90th. I asked them, would they write a letter to her for her 90th birthday to tell her of all of the things that she meant to them. So they did that, and they left no stone unturned. And she'd seen the letters, but they each spent time alone with her this week and read their letters again to her. And we then, and as Mike was just saying there, I think it was Mike about John O'Donoghue, we had Anam Cara and Blessings in the hospital with us, and we read Bannockt to her several times. In fact, I read it this morning at about 5 o'clock when she was weakening, because it was one of those beautiful pieces that she loved. So we had a very special week, she knew she was loved. We were with her this morning, and she passed away at a time, her most favourite time of the day, which was as the sun rises. She was a very early riser. She was always up before the dawn often. Yeah. So it was quite appropriate that she went today, and we're devastated. But at the same time, we realise how lucky we were. She was just unbelievable. And as everyone else will say to you, Mary Louise, Mike, the friendships that she had with everybody, she was just adored. And she was that person. And we had her then as mum and then as Nana Kit. and how lucky we were to have had all of that.
And her texts, she was well up on technology and would text regularly.
Oh,
but
was great.
Susie, your dad died 5 years ago last Monday.
Yeah.
He was buried 5 years ago tomorrow. And did you think that after Gay passed, given they were so obviously so close, did you think that Nana Kit would move out to live with you?
No, she was fiercely independent. Wow. And she, even during COVID, she refused to like, because Dad died in November, and the COVID hit obviously in February of the following year, and so she insisted on staying in Sandymount during COVID, and it was then that she actually probably really grieved for Dad, because she was on her own and she wanted that way. And she then picked, like, typical of her, that her attitude was the show must go on, and she then reacquainted herself with lots of friends who had written to her after Dad died, and they might have left numbers or their addresses, and she either just picked up the phone every couple of days and phoned somebody that she'd maybe just lost contact with because of busy lives, and built up backup friendships with people that she'd lost contact with. So she just had that positivity, and, you know, we're all here, and life's about the living, and and friendships, her friendships, because Dad always was obviously working on Friday night and earlier years on Saturday night. So
and every day of the week,
everything. Every day of the week.
Monday to Friday on radio.
So friendships, her girlfriends were so important to her, and she really, she always told us, you know, make sure you absolutely mind and cherish your circle of girlfriends, because they are, it's so important to you all throughout your life, no matter how happy your family life is. Your girlfriends will always be very, very important, and keep your friends, your separate friends, and everything will be all right, as they say.
And Gabe, I was reading stuff he wrote over the last few days, and he was writing about Kathleen would get up with him every morning. Every morning. Because he was he was an early riser, and he was in here for 7:30, if not before, if he went to Mass. And so she was there all along, even though she had her own TV career. She had an interest in the arts, as Mike and Mary Louise have said. So she was a rock in that sense. How did she handle? Because I remember telling me once, Susie, and I'm sure she's told more stories to Mike and Mary Louise. Earlier on, you said, how do you manage with your man, Gay, and everywhere you go, he stops. She was well known in her own right. And she said, it's generally grand, until one night we were sitting in a restaurant and this chap was leaving, and he said, oh, how are you, Gay? And one word buried in another, a man sat down beside Gay.
Yes.
And before he knew it, he was eating Gay's chips. How did she manage that?
Well, it's funny, she would always have said that Dad was extraordinarily patient and, you know, with everybody, and he gave of himself to everybody that met him, whether it was walking down Grafton Street in the theatre and everything. And their attitude and his attitude was, this is what we do, this is what we signed up for.
Yeah.
And she would always have said if they were out for dinner, that if she went to the toilet, she never came back, but there wasn't somebody sitting in her seat, always. So they generally kind of went out to restaurants with people, other people. But they were so dedicated to each other, Joe, as you know, they really were. And she took a step back from her career and her broadcasting life for myself and Crona and Dad. And myself and Crona never needed a key to get into our home in the afternoons after school. She was always there.
Wow.
And she was always up with Mum and with Dad, rather, in the morning. And I think because she, of their life and their life in the arts, she was able to keep her interests up. And he supported that hugely.
Yeah.
So they were very interesting to each other in their life. And he always encouraged her to do things like go to London or go to the theatre, various things, so she could then report back to him. And, I mean, I think as Mike was saying, she saw Dancing at Lunasa. She was with Anne Freely, travelled the world. She said she saw Dancing at Lunasa in about 6 or 7 languages, any excuse. And they would, in order to ensure that everything was as they wished, they would always bring little slices of lemon with them to go to London or Frankfurt or wherever they're going for the little gin and tonic to make sure, because sometimes in these places you wouldn't necessarily get the slice of lemon.
Oh, God,
so this was
yes.
very important. So that would be sliced and ready in the tin foil before they left.
We're going to come back later because to a lot of friends, Susie, who and people who knew your mother and who want to talk about it, but I just want you to listen to your mother reading the Patrick Kavanagh poem on the day that's in it, and again reading it beautifully, as Mike said earlier. This is the late Kathleen Watkins reading Patrick Kavanagh's poem In Memory of My Mother.
In Memory of My Mother by Patrick Kavanagh. I do not think of you lying in the wet clay of a Monaghan graveyard. I see you walking down a lane among the poplars on your way to the station, or happily going to second mass on a summer Sunday, and you meet me and you say, "Don't forget to see about the cattle." Among your earthiest words, the angels stray. And I think of you walking along a headland of green oats in June, so full of repose, so rich with life. And I see us meeting at the end of a town on a fair day by accident, after the bargains are all made, and we can walk together through the shops and stalls and markets, free in the oriental streets of thought. Oh, you are not lying in the wet clay, for it is a harvest evening now, and we are piling up the ricks against the moonlight. And you smile up at us eternally.
And she was an actress, Susie. She was such a performer. She was on the stage with your dad so many times. She was in the 1966 thing, remind me, Insurrection 1966. Was she not?
Yes.
Wasn't she? Didn't she play Grace Gifford in that? She was
truly
a remarkable woman. Truly.
She did perform that poetry extraordinarily, and she rehearsed it within an inch of itself. So she had all the, you know, the all the pauses in the correct place, the intonation, everything, and that was not because it just didn't happen. You'd hear her reading her poems aloud all of the time, and she's such a massive interest in all of the poets and the poetry.
And
I
was going to say to you, Mary. I hope, Susie, I hope you heard Mary Louise talk about her love for yourself, Susie, obviously Philip Ronan, and the grand Mary Louise.
Oh, I did. Mary Louise, thank you.
Oh, but Susie, it was so true. And sometimes you take that for granted. You think of mothers. She was so privileged to be so loved by you. And she spoke about it all the time. And I know that came, you know, that was something you would have done. You would adored your mother, and Crona and all the grandchildren adored her. But she was so new to it as well. Every day she'd say how much you meant to her, and her and Crona meant to her, and the family meant to her. And she's right, family is everything. My mother used to say there's only two things, family and generosity. And if you can get them right, you're on a good road. But when Kathleen recited poetry, she could stop us in our tracks, because she recited with such naturalism, and her voice was so real and true, and there was no stylization, and she could get to the core of the meaning, whatever O'Donoghue, who wrote about, or even Rita Ann Higgins, who was another favourite poet of hers. Do you remember, Susie, the one about the wash socks,
the
woman washing the fella's socks,
yes,
and ironing the shirt?
The deserter, I think it's called, yes.
Yes, and she could revert to humour and, you know, and irony so fast, as well as the beauty and the grace of John O'Donoghue. So she was a great talent and very sincere, and we loved her.
Well,
and we were privileged to know her.
Yeah.
Very
here.
Privileged to know her.
Yeah. Mike, I know you're still there to finish.
You were
so close to Gay and Kathleen and Susie and Crone and the whole crew.
Well, I was reminded there when Susie was talking about Gay and Kathleen in the restaurants, and Gay, he was a devil for timekeeping.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
Now, I'm pretty strict about it myself, I must admit, but He was an absolute divil for us, and he'd say to you that he said, "Well, we'll call for you on the way to the restaurant, and we'll call for you at 7 o'clock. Yes. Be ready."
Yeah.
And then at 10 to 7, you'd get a phone call. Yeah. "We're outside waiting for you." "Oh, geez, hold on a minute." And then, or if he said, "We'll meet you in the restaurant at 7 o'clock," and he'd be sitting with Kathleen, whether she liked it or not, they'd be sitting in the far corner, and he'd be glaring at the door, waiting for you to come in, and it would be, "You're late, you'd be a minute behind." And Kathleen, "Okay, would you, for God's sake, stop it?" And she was, I don't know whether she kept up the timekeeping after Gay went,
did.
Really.
She did.
I think he affected all of us about timekeeping.
Susie.
Yes, his attitude was he took everything as a broadcast. And I remember him saying, "I cannot ever afford to be late for broadcasting, and therefore I'll never be late for anything. Right. So if I treat it like a broadcast, I'll be on time." And so I'm sure we invited them to our Christmas Day. Well, they always came to us for Christmas Day. So about three or four years before Dad died, we were here in house, and I said, "Look, come out for 1 or 2 o'clock for lunch in the evening." And sure, they were there at 10:30. We were all still in our pyjamas. They just wanted to be with us, so we just put on the kettle.
Yeah. Susie, there's something very poignant and maybe even appropriate in the fact that Nana Kit died in the same week, 5 years almost to the day after Gay. I presume she'll be interred in St. Fintan's. Have you got around?
She will be, and I called into Dad on my way home from the hospital this morning. Myself and the children, and we went in and we said a few words, and we thanked him for taking her to him this week, because it was when we went in on Sunday, and we knew that really this was the end for her. It was extraordinary that Monday was his anniversary, and you know, even in the chapel in Black Rock, it's such a beautiful place to go. And I spent a lot of time there this week saying, "Please take her to you now." And she's ready. And she was ready to go to Dad. She spoke. I mean, she did an article with Barry Egan in
lovely piece.
Life magazine. And that was originally supposed to be an interview about her 90th and becoming 90. And she did the interview with Barry, and we got all the photographs over to him, and I didn't see or hear the interview until it was printed, and I got such a land when I read it, because I realised that she was ready to go to him and whatever, and her faith was so strong,
because
and her belief. And
she spoke in that interview about her funeral.
She really did. Yeah. She did, and we laughed, because I went into her the day and I said, "Mom, I hope you've spoken to Frank McNamara, because that poor man is probably actually choking on his breakfast, because you've given him a job that he has no idea." And her attitude was, "Frank knows. I've never spoken to him about it. He'll just know, Susie." So,
that interview with
Barry really was the end. You could feel that she was ready at that point, if whatever happened the next year or 6 months or whatever it was.
Mike.
And Susie, you know, the wonderful career that Gay had, and I mean, Lord, he was just the all-time great, but in the wonderful career, she really was one of the mainstays, if you like, of his entire career. She was there for him all the time. She did so much for him. She enhanced Gay in so many ways, as he did her.
Yeah.
But she was such an important part of the history of Gay Byrne on television, apart from the distinction she herself brought to her career and life.
And just before...
Can I just add to that? Because I think what Mike has said there is so true. But in all of her friends, of which I count myself just one of many, she enhanced all of our lives as well. You know, she made us feel that we were special, that we had something to offer, that we were part of her life. She never forgot us, her conversations, her visitations, her travel with her, whatever. And her belief in whatever you were doing, doesn't matter how small it was or how great. So she enhanced. We were very privileged to be enhanced by her as well as her friends. And I thank her most sincerely for that. And we will miss her terribly, as okay. I know Susie just, and Cronin and the
Susie,
family.
Just, Susie, I, before you go, and I understand how, how you must be all totally wrecked given the last week and the fact that you're 24/7 with Nana Kit. Just listen to two people, and they're representative, by the way, we can't get them all. Mary Lane is in Donegal.
Hello, you say, how are you?
You'll be forever grateful to Kathleen Watkins.
Yes, I will. She interviewed my my grandmother back in the 1980s, okay. During Faces and Places up in Inishowen. Yes. She was actually interviewing my uncle, Neil, and when she was there, she discovered that my granny had a very fine singing voice, as she okay. described it. And we, as a result, have a beautiful rendition of my granny singing The Hills of Donegal with a lovely interview with Kathleen. And I have to say, my heart is really going out to Crona and Susie today, because I'm having a day where I'm very much missing my own mother.
Yeah.
So, God bless you, girls.
Okay. Well said.
Thank you.
Man.
Thank you.
And
thank
so appropriate you. From so appropriate from Donegal, given she loved Donegal. Julie McGeever, sorry for holding you, Julie.
That's okay. I'm just listening to all the lovely tributes to someone who has been a very special friend to me for more than 40 years in that case. I first met Kathleen through a fashion parade she was organising for her flower club, and we all know she was a great gardener. She loved flowers. And then I was the Sydney Rose in 1977, okay. and Kathleen interviewed me as the Sydney Rose. That was the year that she did. She was the compere of the Rose of Tralee.
Yes, the only
and
woman ever, until Catherine Thomas arrived or died this year, the only woman ever to do
right.
it. Yeah.
And, well, she preceded Gay. I mean, she showed
yes.
Gay how to do it.
Yes.
We used to
here,
joke
here.
About that. But she remained a constant friend in my life for I won't say every day, but all the years ever since. And I can say, for anybody who has that privilege and saying she was my friend, I can also say she was a strong influence in my life. If you ever told her something, obviously confidentially,
yes.
that was a concern to you, she would be repeatedly back to you until you were settled
yeah.
on how you were going to approach it.
Yeah.
But another area that she also it was an icon was the fashion world.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Kathleen really had a great contribution with Irish fashion. And it was during the festival in Tralee. I mean, after Rose Year, I was involved with Tralee for many years after that. And Kathleen was a very big part of it through Gay. But she had her own presence in Tralee and her own contributions. But one night we'd been to a very good fashion parade down there. And we just loved a local designer, Matt O'Donoghue from Kerry. And we thought, he deserves to be seen by the people outside the world. So we conjured up a great idea to take Irish couture fashion to Australia.
Well,
and she
good.
Came with it. And in 1980, when we were celebrating the bicentennial, Kathleen and Crona came down to do the fashion parades. But there was many things after that. She used to, when I moved back to Ireland, to Mayo, to Pontoon, she used to come down. I was on Faces and Places with her. All these things right. are memories. But all I can say is, I'm just really sad too, like all her friends.
Okay,
she was an
it.
Iconic friend. She was a wonderful friend. And this time last year at the Letters to Gay launch, she was probably one of the most stylish women in the room.
And she was so proud of Susie, who put that book together. Thank you, Julie McGeever. Susie, a reaction from people are saying, one, you're reminding people, so many people, of how much they loved their granny, because you're talking about your children's love for Nana Kit. She was a remarkable grandmother, a remarkable mother, but above all, a remarkable woman. So deepest sympathy from so many people, Susie. And
Thank you, Joe.
Go gently over the next few days.
Thank you. And thank you for, on behalf of myself and Cronin and the children, for the beautiful tributes that you've done today and for your own personal friendship, because over Dad's illness, we and in the last 5 years, little books would appear, as you know, it's mm-hmm. in the post. And one very recently, beautiful poetry book. Mum was in Blackrock Clinic and she was quite ill but okay. And you again sent a lovely book just
info, and we didn't even need to open it to know it was from you. And it was, your friendship has been unwavering and always there for them. And it's, today is a very sad day for us, but also we were very lucky, and we know we were, and not everybody had that and has it. So it's heartbreaking, but we were privileged.
Well said, Susie, and deepest condolences again on the passing.
Thank
of
you,
Kathleen Watkins.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. Mary Murphy is in Ballyfermot in Dublin. Mary, this story begins nearly 30 years ago, 1996. Tell us how it began.
My dad passed away in April 1996, and it was his wish to be cremated and to be laid to rest in the what they called the flower garden in Glasnevin.
Okay.
So we obeyed his wishes to the letter of the law, obviously, at the time. So, okay, that was grand. Up now to when my mum died, which was 2013. And we decided, between the jigs and the rings, one person saying she wants to be cremated and the other saying she wants to be buried. So I knew my mum was terrified of fire, absolutely scared, silly of fire. So I said, right, we'll bury her. So we decided, bought a grave up in Esker, and that's what we're going to do.
So we went into
the undertakers.
Okay.
Yeah. So we went into the undertakers, who shall remain nameless, and we were arranging for mum's funeral. So my sister happened to say to the undertaker, would it be possible to take my dad's ashes from Glasnevin and bring them up, and we can put them in to Esker with my mum?
Very good.
And he said, yeah, sure, no problem. Okay. So when did Daddy die? Daddy died in 96. So off he went. He said, I have to go off and check something. Be back to you in a couple of minutes. So when he came back, I knew by the look on his face there was something wrong. And he said, girls, I'm really sorry to add to your misery, but he said, your dad's ashes were never interred. They were scattered.
Ah.
Right?
Scattered where?
So, up in Glasnevin.
Okay.
That they were scattered along, that they weren't actually interred. Now, to be honest with you, any time I ever went up there and I looked at these big stones with all the names on them, I thought, where the hell are the ashes? You know, it didn't look like there was anywhere they were going to be able to put them. But anyway, that was neither here nor there. So there was nothing we could do about it. The ashes were scattered, so we buried my mum, and that was the end of that. So listening to your programme, as I do, as you know yourself, and I heard all the complaints about Glasnevin, and I thought, here, I'll jump on the bandwagon and send my story of woe in. And Rachel rang me the other day, God bless her, and she said to me, I have news for you, Marie.
Okay.
She said, your father's ashes have turned up.
Brilliant.
I went, what? You are joking me. She said she had been on to the Glasnevin Trust. She spoke to some lady, I don't know who it was.
We've been dealing with,
Rachel is to ring me back and give me the details. So I said I'd like to be able to pick them up and bring them up and be a nice Christmas present for me mum. So this is what's after happening after, as you say, almost 30 years. My dad's ashes torn up. They said they had the name and everything on them. And as far as they're concerned, they are the right ones.
Yeah, and there's,
so here we go.
And they're in a particular spot. And they also say, our records indicate that an additional space, this is Glasnevin, Dublin Cemetery Trust, our records indicate that an additional space has been reserved. So if needs be, another set of ashes could be interred. But as you say, your mother had no interest
in that. Was buried,
And they'd be happy now to reunite the ashes with yourself. And you're going to bring them up to Esker?
I would bring them up definitely and put them in with my mum and reunite
but
the
did
two
you
of
not,
them.
You see, but did you not think, because I always thought, you know that wall, Glasnevin is such a beautiful cemetery, but that wall where the names are, you saying the ashes aren't necessarily there behind those plaques?
Joe, it's not the wall.
Okay.
It was never the wall.
Okay.
It's down what they call the flower garden.
Ah,
if you come out of the back door, come out the back door of the crematorium church, turn right, and the first turn on the left, you'll see all the big high stones with all the names on them.
Okay, and you...
That's where the flower garden is.
So up to yesterday, you were under the mistaken belief that your father's ashes were scattered across that rose garden rather than in kept together in one particular place. You've now...
That's what we were told.
Glass Nevin have now confirmed to us that they were actually kept together in one particular place and they know what that place is and they can verify there are his ashes from their own records and they will gladly organise with you and the family, of course, to remove them to wherever you want them removed. So That's progress.
It's a good news story.
Yes, good news story.
exactly.
Well done. And your mother, your dad died in 96. Which is nearly 30 years ago.
Mom blasted for 17 years after.
She was
93 when she died.
Wow. And she got... Many years was she on her own, so to speak? Well, she was a widow, but she had all of you around her. She was what? She died many years after your dad.
I lived with her.
Oh, well done, yeah.
17. She died. Yeah. Daddy went in 96. She went in 2013.
Yeah.
Oh, so nice. I was living with her anyway. Now, I was working full-time, obviously, at the time.
And
I'm only a couple of years retired.
And Marie, you know that conversation you had about... She was adamant about cremation, was she?
She was saying to me she wanted to be cremated and go in with my dad.
Okay.
But the morning she passed away in St. James's.
Okay.
And when we all obviously came back to the house here, being the family home, we were sitting talking about it.
Yeah.
And one of my brothers and my sister said, but she told me she wanted to be buried.
Okay.
I went, what?
Okay.
In the name of God.
What are we going to do?
Now, I didn't know what to do because she had been running it down my neck. I want to be cremated and go in with your daddy. Which obviously is the thing to do.
Yeah.
But then again, my mother was scared silly of fire.
Wow.
Terrified. Absolutely
and
terrified.
And you have no idea where that...
So much so...
Yeah. Any idea where that came from?
So,
as a child or her terror?
No, it was just terror of fire. Like, I mean, she'd see places on the TV going up in smoke, houses or buildings or whatever, and she'd say, oh my God, I hope I'm never caught in one of those. Oh my God. Oh no, it's a kill. No, I hate fire,
Well,
when she'd be going out, she'd be double checking everything. She'd be going out the door and say, oh, did I check? Did I turn that off? Did I turn that off? And she'd come back in and check again.
Well,
you know, she just had this thing about fire.
Okay, well, Brendan and Peggy will be reunited in interment over the next few weeks. Yeah, in Esker. Okay. Mary, thanks
Please
indeed.
God, yeah.
Mark. God rest both of them.
And listen, thank you very much to Rachel for all her hard work. God bless her.
Yeah, and well done to Dublin Cemeteries Trust for assisting us once again. Thanks indeed, Marie. Marie, thanks, love. That's Marie Murphy from Ballyfermot in Dublin. Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And you may have noticed in the British politics over the last few months, especially since the budget, just like in our own budget, the treatment of carers, as you know, after the budget here, about 6 weeks ago, Liveline was dominated for a week by one single issue. The calls just came in non-stop, and that was the treatment of carers, that to claim a carer's allowance because it came in light of it's happening, isn't it, this week and the beginning of December, the double payments for everybody who has children, for example, and people are saying that's a great idea. But why does every carer have to be means tested, not just on their means, but the means of the household to decide whether they are entitled to a carer's allowance, sometimes of zero, if they don't pass the means test, which is quite strict. And other times we had it before, people were offered a fiver a week, and then small amounts now. And in the UK, that's now become an issue. And there's also become an issue in the UK of revenue, Her Majesty's revenue, demanding repayments from certain carers. Small repayments, by the way. Small repayments. And that's becoming a scandal. It hasn't become a scandal here. I don't know if it'll become an election issue. But Geraldine, this is outrageous. What happened to you, Geraldine?
Good afternoon, Good Joe. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah. What happened to me, Joe, just was a bolt out of the blue. I have been in receipt of half carers allowance for about 3 years, maybe 1 or 4 years, for my husband who passed away, unfortunately, earlier this year. So then I received an email last Friday from Revenue telling me that sent me correspondence to my account. So I checked that and it was a balancing statement there for the year, and it was 2022, telling me I owe them 1,100 or something of an underpayment.
Wow.
So I duly rang them about that thing because I couldn't understand.
They're saying this was they overpaid you, the means tested carers.
Yes, I had an underpayment. They overpaid. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So I rang them about that, really upset about it, because at the end of every year I'd be onto Revenue and have my balancing statement, and usually I had overpayments to them that they would refund me some money. But anyway, what had happened, apparently, then I spoke to a lovely lady and she said, unfortunately, Geraldine, that's not the only year. She said that you have underpayments for other years, which floored me altogether. So I said, and how did this happen? And then she went on to explain to me that when I was in receipt of carers, that I should have notified Revenue because it's a taxable income. And she said, unfortunately, I think the word she used was, it's the only social welfare payment that does not patch across to us from social welfare.
Okay. So they're saying it was your fault?
Yes, I should have notified them that I was receiving carers, but that never entered my head. I didn't
because
know
they wanted, not only are you means tested for the carers allowance, but if you get the carers allowance and it puts you over to do with your other income or whatever, your earned income, for God's sake, if it puts you over the limit, it's reluctantly given because it's means tested, obviously, by one...
Yes, very stringently now.
Yeah,
very,
I know very it. Strange. I know it is. I know how strange it is. It's stringent.
I think it goes down to what change you have in your piggy bank.
And I use the word reluctantly, advisedly, because the government wanted to give it with a heart. There wouldn't be this awful means test. It's reluctantly given. And when you do get it, if you're lucky enough to get it after the stringent means test, they now come, another department doing their job, i.e. Revenue, will come looking at you and say, hang on a minute, we want a slice of that. And now, now how much are they saying they want from your carers allowance?
They want from 2001, 2002, 2003, it's a total of 4.5, I think, something in around that 1,000. But there's also 2004, this year, 2024, that I won't get the figure on that until next year, which will be in around another 1,000 that I will owe.
And what was your reaction when you got this, especially your revenue bill?
Total shock, Joe. I was so upset. The lady on the line was so nice, so caring. You know, she knew I got a terrible shock. But that's unfortunately it, to give you the choice of paying it in one lump sum or over so many years at 100 euro or something like that a month, which hangs over you forever.
And how long, Geraldine, were you looking at? Your husband passed this year, I see.
He did earlier this year. I was probably looking after him for 3 or 4 years before that, and didn't get carers for that because the process just put me off looking for it, to be honest with you, because it was so stringent. But then I applied again and I got half.
What was that? 140?
143 odd cents, yes.
Good
which,
God.
Which was a help. It's obviously nothing in comparison with 24/7 work to do, but you do that, it's a labour of love at the same time when you do it, but you have to live at the same time.
What are you going to do?
I don't have much choice, do I? Have to beg, steal or borrow and pay it back, either in a lump sum or over time, I don't know. It's not easy. I have to think about it. It's not something, obviously. I don't think I'd be able to afford to pay it in a lump sum. I don't know, but it has to be paid. It's a debt. And
Geraldine, can I ask you, is your income a pension just?
Yes, generally, I work part-time. Yeah, I work part-time.
Well done.
Yeah, I work 2 evenings a week.
So, but hang on, if you work part-time, I presume Revenue had your PPS number.
They have to certainly have. That's why I understood that when they have your PPS number, they know exactly what your income is.
But this is
state pensions and all that. They know all about that. I didn't have to ring them up and say, look, what I'm getting, a state pension. They knew that, you know what I mean? They could tax that.
But this is not very...
I work an extra few hours at work, I don't have to ring them and say, look, I worked 3 extra hours this week, so make sure you tax me on that, because they automatically know from my PPS number. Yeah.
But it also means this is not just a nightmare for you. You say Revenue have told you that they are automatically informed of all other types of social welfare payments except carers allowance.
Yes,
except the means tested carers allowance.
Yes, she did. Now I'm sure. I'm just wondering, was it remiss of me or naive of me not to know to contact them, or is there other people in the same situation? Has this happened to somebody else? But I certainly don't want it to happen to anybody else in the future. That's why I'm calling.
But even in the reality, Geraldine, if you apply for carer's allowance, and as you say, a lot of people have enough to be doing because they are a carer. They are a carer, which is an incredible position, an incredible job to do. You are a carer, which is all day, every day, 24/7, and say the 365 recording. They're saying if you are a carer and you do manage to get through all the paperwork to apply for the means test of carer's allowance, and you do get the carer's allowance eventually, the first thing you should do as you continue your non-stop caring, but the first thing you should do is ring another, try and find out who to ring for a start.
Who to ring, exactly.
You have to ring and contact another government department to say, I'm getting 143 a week from social welfare and my means test of care. This is lunacy.
It's lunacy, but that's the reality of it, Joe, as I understand it.
Let's see what will come up as an election issue. You know, I know.
I just would like to warn other people because, you know, it's an awful shock to get.
Yeah.
When you least expect that after.
And have you said to them, listen, one, there's obviously no appeal in that sense. They say revenue is the revenue, I suppose. People are living
fear. Exactly, that's the figures. That's the way they...
And will they give you a payment schedule?
Well, apparently the option is a monthly amount of, I think it's 90-something, up between 90 and 100 euro. Or as you pay the whole amount. I haven't asked them if I can pay some of it and then do the rest over time. I don't know, but it all has to be paid. So at the end of the day, it's the same difference.
It is bizarre. It is bizarre. And it's nothing got to do with your case. But I saw a number of people raised yesterday in the starting by Kevin Faulkner. He was making the point, that woman that was sent to prison last week for claiming... her father's pension. That was wrong.
Of course it was.
But she got 5 years, 8 months in prison, and she'll do at least 2 years. And I said David Drum did 2 years, 8 months for 9.2 billion and more. But as someone pointed out yesterday, it's a Keith Faulkner. It is, and it was very, as usual, very well written piece. He was saying, this, what were social welfare at, continuing to pay a pension?
Yes.
They didn't spot at any stage that this man, it was found by a genealogist, I'd love to talk to that genealogist, who was doing a hobby, that this man had lived to 110 and no one had remarked upon it. Geraldine, mind yourself. I think...
That's my story.
Yeah,
thank you for taking my call.
Well, I think thank you for making the call, and thank you for making the call on the day that's in it, on the eve of the election, because...
Yes, that's true. And I think there's some bill going through about carers at the minute. Yeah. Or there's some...
Department of Social Welfare and Social Protection say that the decision letter informing a carer they get the allowance states that the payment is a taxable source of income and that they need to inform their local tax office of this.
Right.
Now, this is one government... This is one government agency, anyway. Okay, it's pretty cold statement.
All other social welfare payments transfer over to revenue except okay. this one.
And these payments are so, if they are got, they are so hard got, and it seems so hard given. Geraldine, do not overthink this. Do not over worry on this. You will get politicians, hopefully. We're still a good country in terms of democracy, but you get politicians knocking on your door. Don't be afraid to say it. I know. I read one piece you wrote in, said, I'm mortified. Do not be mortified. You've done nothing wrong. Absolutely nothing wrong.
No, but you, at the end of every year, you get your balance statement. I think that's grand. Don't owe anything there. They owe to me, maybe. Okay. €2. Whatever.
What was your husband's first name?
Peter.
Well, God rest him, because I know he died.
Amen. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah. Okay, Geraldine. Geraldine's in Castlebar. Thank you so much. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Noreen Cassidy once has a beautiful memory about Kathleen Watkins, and it is... again, in the dome, in the Rose of Tralee, in Kerry. Noreen, your memory, please.
Yes, hi, Joe. I was very lucky and fortunate enough to have won the Rose of Tralee in 1986.
Congratulations.
And thank you so much, a long time ago now. Yeah. But my father sadly passed away in 1988.
Okay.
And then my mother then subsequently went back to Tralee a few years later. And the first night of the dome came, and my mother went to go to her seats that had been reserved. And by mistake, there'd actually been a seat also reserved for my father. So anyway, obviously,
yes.
He was passed and he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So the second night came of the dome, and my mother went to go back to her seat. And when she did, somebody from RTE approached her and said, Mrs. Cassidy. And she said, yes. And he said, please come this way.
Okay.
Anyway, she followed him and went down to the front. And there, Kathleen had actually found out about the story. She'd heard it actually by somebody, I think, in the hotel. And she insisted that my mother went and sat with her for the second night. And I think that actually really summed up Kathleen. I think there was an understated sincerity and kindness to her. And I think everybody, and on behalf of all the Roses of Tralee and the Roses involved in the Festival of Kerry, I think that's what we felt about her, was that there was a kindness there. Yeah. There was a very behind the scenes, but it was always done with sincerity. And I'm sending my love to Crona and Susie and the children today, and I will be lighting a candle for her tonight.
Lovely. Well said, Noreen. That's Noreen Cassidy. Cathy O'Connor. Cathy, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
A saying, a beautiful phrase. Go ahead. What a stop in your tracks phrase, but from Kathleen. And given what Susie, her daughter, was saying earlier on about her mother and Nana Kit, the granny to the grandchildren, you were watching television.
Yeah. So quite a few years ago, Kathy was on the Late Late One Night with Ryan Tubridy.
Yeah.
And I think we were talking about books or something, and one of the things that she did say is, you are happy as your saddest child. And it just kind of really got to me. And I thought that even my daughters are adults. If they've got any kind of problems or upset, I worry about them until I feel their happiness again. And I always found Kathleen was a very wise woman, and how true that statement was.
You were as happy as your saddest child.
Yeah.
In other
words, got to know.
What a
wasn't it great?
Yeah, what a moving saying.
Yeah, but a wise phrase. Yeah.
And I didn't know what would be the standout moments from the program today. I never do know, and often I judge them wrong. But I think the standout moment from the program today, to me, is when people were talking. I know we'd lots of other things on the program. We were talking about Kathleen Watkins. Is the mother, the granny. And hopefully it will remind people, if they need, hopefully they don't need reminding, but will remind people of the importance and the love of their mothers and indeed their grannies. If you're lucky enough, a lot of people are, thankfully, lucky enough to have your granny and your granddad. Give them a big hug today. Well said, Kathleen. You were as happy as a mother or indeed a grandmother. You're as happy as your saddest child. Well said. That's Cathy O'Connor. Thank you, Cathy. Eamon Monaghan. Eamon, you were mentioned actually in that Barry Egan interview a few weeks ago in Life magazine in the Sunday Indo. Great piece. And by the way, a beautiful piece in terms of layout and photographs. And it was it's a fine magazine. But how did you come in contact, Eamon? Because I know you're a show band person. How did you come in contact with Kathleen?
Well, Joe, in 1960, when we were starting, we did our first bit on radio with David doing the 17 Club.
Okay.
But then later on, in 1980 or so, Gay and Paul Sweeney, who is dead,
another great friend of theirs,
Lord of Mercy and Paul, they came up. They wanted to climb the Bluestack Mountains.
Okay.
And which I'm from Mount Charles, which is at the base of the Bluestacks. And we formed a group called the Bluestack Scramblers.
The Walkers, yeah.
And
the infamous.
There was nearly all Donegal people, Pat and Joe Dunleavy, Declan and Bridgine Boner. Mick Sherry, an awful lot of us.
Another lovely man. And you were, she had incredible close friends, incredible, and she kept them close, and she nurtured.
We used to pick a president every year, and Gay would do the whole thing, and Gay would introduce the president, and the president. I was picked one year, and we went to Egypt that year.
Oh, lovely, God.
We cruised on the Nile.
Down the Nile.
The conversation, I guess the Monday morning quarterbacking, right?
Okay, there's someone who's just bleeding in from another program. Let's take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Rachel Graham produced. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home with the latest colours and designs in curtains and bedding, in store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.